You're listening to the Mum Drum Podcast, motherhood to a different beat.
Hi, and welcome to the Mum Drum. I'm Dr. Nicole Hyatt.
And I'm Amy Fellman.
Today on the show, we're going to be chatting to Naimi and Andy, parents of Manus and Dulcie. After the birth of Manus, Naimi experienced severe postnatal anxiety and depression, and they both experienced major relationship difficulties during this time.
Having a baby can be a really stressful experience. We're not only faced with role changes, lifestyle changes, and sometimes financial challenges as well. There's also a lack of that nurturing couple time and me time that we've always been so used to. And I reckon the most difficult part is during this really vulnerable time, the person that we typically leaned on, our partner, is also exhausted and in need of increased support. So what do we do?
That's why we're incredibly grateful to have Naimi and Andy here today to share their journey with us, how they got through an incredibly difficult period as new parents, only to become stronger and more united in spite of the odds being stacked against them.
Naimi, Andy, welcome to the Mum Drum. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Nice to be here.
We're going to start with you, Naimi. You experienced postnatal anxiety and depression, really, after the birth of your, was it your first child?
It was our first child, Manus, our son, who is 9 now. So a little while ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that had huge impacts on your relationship as well during that time. So keen to hear from Andy as well what that was all like, but love to hear a bit more about those early experiences for you, Naimi. So what it was like day-to-day experiencing the anxiety, the depression?
Well, I think it was a bit of a shock, really. And it certainly wasn't something I expected to experience at all. Looking back in my late 20s and early 20s, there were probably little signs of anxiety there for me already, but nothing that sort of affected me hugely on a day-to-day basis. When our son was born, for a while I just thought it was an extended, you know, three-day blues, an extension of that. And I just thought I was tired. I was adjusting to a new role. I was also juggling full-time work and motherhood. I had a business at that time. So I had a lot on my plate.
As in straight away, so you didn't...
I didn't really take a lot of time off work.
Wow.
And I remember...
You were paying invoices.
I remember, yeah, as I was going into labour, paying final invoices and processing bits and pieces that I needed to do, I'd have a minor contraction, put my head down on my desk, and, you know, I knew I had plenty of time. But... Also, after Manus was born, I remember sitting in our bed, breastfeeding, a laptop on my lap, and I was putting whatever I was working on in his bassinet beside me, that was a job done. So I didn't allow myself that space to care for myself. I gave a lot of time to my child. I gave a lot of time to my business. I neglected our marriage, and I certainly neglected my self-care. So it didn't take long for things to spiral. And I held on for quite some time, and I got connected with a mother's group a bit earlier than normal because I asked, you know, I needed to get out of the house and stay active. But it still didn't take long for things to slip. Yeah.
Why did you decide to keep working so intensely so early on? Because it's very unusual to take absolutely no time off at all. What was it about you?
Well, I have my own business, and I had staff as well, which the business was 3 years old when I had my son. So really it was still in its fairly early days, and it was, the business had needs. So there was that financial pressure for me to keep working as well. And I certainly didn't go into work every day. There were a couple of times I brought my son in for a staff meeting, but I still kept tabs on things from behind the scenes. So that was that added layer of pressure, that financial pressure on top of the pressure of adjusting to being a new mum for the first time. And our family, both my parents and Andy's parents, they lived quite a way away, so we didn't have that immediate access to family support either. So looking back, it was a perfect storm. But I'm quite an ambitious person, and you're quite, you know, practical. Let's get things done. So I just thought, let's just get things done.
Yeah.
Let's just get this parenthood thing done. Yeah. But behind the scenes, it started to fracture.
So you said things started to spiral.
For me, I felt like I was starting to live a lie. And so that was me getting up, getting dressed, going to work, or going to mother's group and playing chit-chat. But inside, you know, physically and mentally for me, that meant sometimes sitting on the couch for half an hour trying to catch my breath before I left the house just to go and have a cup of tea with my mother's group. And for work, I worked in a really professional environment. So, and I had a lot of face-to-face interaction with clients. So I had to play the part. So I was, you know, running a successful business. You know, everyone said, oh, wow, you've bounced back really well. So there was this sort of pressure to keep up with appearances. Mm-hmm. And I remember driving home from work one day, you know, well-dressed, beautiful car, lovely family to return home to. And I just, I felt like nothing was adding up for me. It all looked great on paper. And I just couldn't connect with this life that I had. Does that make sense? Yeah. It started to lose meaning for me. Yeah. The point that we reached out for help was when I got really sick. I had a bad cold. I got a horrible eye infection, and it was my body's way of saying, we're shutting down the show. And I went to my GP, who I'd had conversations with earlier, but had not wanted to go on medication. And I remember sitting in her clinic that day, crying and saying to her, I've lost my grip now. I feel like life is slipping through my fingers. I've lost control. And that's when I made the decision to start medication. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a big day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt like I had failed. Okay. I remember that feeling of handing my script to the pharmacist. And I felt like I'd been defeated. Mm-hmm. That was what I felt at the time. Yeah.
Wow. Mm. Looking back, how do you feel about that moment now?
Oh, I think it's the best thing I could have done.
Yeah
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think I resisted taking medication for a while because I just thought I could do it on my own, mm-hmm. you know? But life doesn't work like that. We need support from other people or other services or medication sometimes.
Isn't it incredible that if you, for example, were in pregnancy and you were diagnosed with gestational diabetes and you were told you needed to have mm-hmm. medication, yeah. you wouldn't think, I failed at this pregnancy, I've got to try and do it without the medication. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't think like that. Mm-hmm. Yet when it becomes, it's part of this thing of motherhood that if you're a good mother, and if you're a successful mother, you can do it without medication, and you can do it, and you can sail through it, because that's what everyone's striving for, and that's what society is telling us it's supposed to be like.
And I think I'd sailed through school, sailed through uni, landed a good job, started a business. Mm-hmm. I could manage staff. I could do all of these different things. So I felt like I was a skilled, intelligent person. I still think I am. Yeah. But I just struggled to accept the fact that I was having a hard time mm-hmm. being a mum. Mm-hmm. And now I know that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I still have a hard time being a mum, but I give myself permission for that now. And I didn't give myself permission before. Yeah.
It's like you didn't accept the changes that parenting brings. It's like, I'm just going to stay the person, you know, and we can't be 100% of many things. It's not possible to do that. So it's no wonder you ended up feeling so overwhelmed and you just kind of shut down.
Yeah. And I chat with mums, new mums now or pregnant women who tell me that, they're going to take a month off and then start a business or go back to work. And I just go, okay, we'll just see how that goes. Just see how it rolls out. Yeah. And not in a cheeky way, but just a stay open to the fact that things could be different. Yeah.
So in your kind of darkest moments, like how bad did things get for you?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
I just remember wanting to leave, to get on a plane and go anywhere. That's probably the worst point. And I at one point I remember saying to Andy, if he wanted to leave our marriage with our child, that I would understand. And I genuinely did. Yeah. I genuinely understood, because I just thought he didn't sign up for this. And Manus didn't sign up for this either. This is not the family that I thought we would have. Yeah. And I didn't think, you know, I thought I would be able to contribute in a really different way to our family unit. And I was felt like I was falling short big time. And then I'd ripped Andy off.
So you took all the responsibility and to be this supercharged mum 100% of the time, taking everything on. And so Andy, what was this like for you? I mean, on the other side, I mean, Naomi obviously felt that she was letting everyone down and she was letting you down, and to the point that she felt that she would understand if you left. Where were things for you at that point?
It's a really confusing time, like just parenthood in general, when you're first starting out, particularly your first child. It doesn't come with a set of instructions or anything like that. And like you're saying, you speak to people who are expecting their first child, and oh, to go back to that ignorance of that blissful sort of unawareness of what the trappings are that come with it. But you just cannot understand, you know, that those initial stages of parenthood. So when you're sort of going through this period and trying to, I guess, navigate our way through, it's difficult to see the warning signs sometimes of when things are happening, because you don't have a reference point to work off. You're all sort of making it up as you go. So the moods would just become harder to manage, I suppose. And I guess when you feel like you're always putting out fires, it's hard to be progressive and things like that. So, it just got to a point where I think we needed a circuit breaker to close it down. And so I think it was probably, Romanus was about nearly 6 months old.
It was September.
Yeah, so, and it was one day, I think, I can't remember if I was home or if I'd come home that afternoon, and essentially I could see that, you know, things weren't particularly great. And
what were you
seeing? It was just that resignation, I suppose, in some ways, of just everything was just too hard. Mm-hmm. And it had been going for that, you know, quite a period. And I know that, you know, I know Naomi's strong and she's trying to work her way through it, and I guess I was trying to support her as best I could through that, but at that point I just realised that the best thing I could do was I called Panda, and I just passed over the phone. I said, here, start talking.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Good on you. How did you even know about Panda?
Oh, I guess it's, if you surround yourself with information enough, then you become aware of these sorts of things. But I don't know. I guess it's probably all through the child health books and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I'm a pretty active father in parenting, I suppose. So I was across, you know, pretty much anything that was in that book, although I'd probably forget it as soon as I look at it. But it's, I guess it's, you know, you're a family unit and you're only as strong as, you know, the weakest link at any one particular point in time. And that's not to say you're the weakest link, but in terms of, you know, when someone's struggling, you've got to all pull together to make it work. And, you know, that's just what you've got to do.
What was it like when Naomi said, I'll totally understand if you leave? Like, I see that I'm kind of the problem here. Like, what was that like for you?
It's pretty hard. But I guess stubbornness kicks in and you go.
Okay.
Sort of, you know, I guess in living in a modern world, you've got to be a little bit more accepting and progressive in your thinking, but at the same time you go, no, I'm just not going to accept that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And we'll work through it.
And so, Andy, you were talking about, you know, obviously you were informed and you did have access and looked at those booklets and were able to be proactive in terms of taking that first step for getting help. A lot's changed for dads being a dad in this world. It's quite a different, we don't necessarily have role models from our own parents. Mm. It's a very different time to be a father. What do you think, going through the stages of pregnancy and birth and being a new dad, what are some of the challenges you think, particularly for dads these days?
Yeah, it's interesting, like you say, that I guess this, or the generation that we're part of, mm-hmm. we're probably the first generation that's really engaged in parenthood as a father, mm-hmm. and active parenting. So it's not to say that there aren't people who have done it before, but as a probably more of a rule of thumb.
Yeah.
So it's, you sort of, you don't have those landmarks along the way to sort of guide you. You sort of, you're making it up a little bit as you go, and mm-hmm. without having that sort of modelling that's happened with your own parents. So it's really challenging in that regard. I think in terms of like pregnancy and the like, you're completely detached from it. Yeah. It's you're an innocent bystander in some ways as it goes along, because you can feel the baby and you can see the changes and everything that's going on and where the emotional challenges that go with it as well. But in terms of
does it feel real in pregnancy?
No, it's still
a bit surreal. You can see the changes physically, but
yeah.
Yeah.
There's an emotional attachment to it, mm-hmm. but it's not, it's still quite intangible.
Mm.
And then I guess in the early stages of, post-birth,
mm-hmm.
Everything, it's about the mother-baby unit,
mm-hmm.
and you're still sort of skirting around the edges, yeah. trying to sort of, you're helping and you're trying to be as active as you can and do what you can, but that initial bond, I think, is quite it's difficult to achieve in some ways.
Mm.
It's there, but it's not. It's a very different bond to the mother child relationship. Mm. So, mm-hmm. I guess the emotional. There's just all sorts of challenges that go along with that.
Mm.
But yeah, you're making it up as you go.
Mm.
I think that's one of the biggest things. So there's no wrong and there's no right. You've just got to have a go.
Do you think there's more? Sorry, Amy. Do you think there's more pressure on dads these days to be there at every stage along the journey
You're probably coming from a double income family that all of a sudden. Someone's out of work for, mm-hmm. Hopefully longer
work.
Than a week or something.
Please.
Yeah, what are you complaining about?
but then with that, in our situation, Naomi went back to work, so I changed my working arrangements as well.
Mm.
So we're minimising care that Manus went into. So I changed my working week, and you've got to have difficult conversations with your work as well as a father sometimes to find the best arrangement for your family. Mm. And it doesn't work for everybody.
No. And I think you were very fortunate to have employers who were open to having those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think for me, part of my decision to go back to work early was that I needed that outside contact as well. I needed that that was a little bit of my support network there too. So whilst it sounds completely crazy, there was a bit of
there's always a bit of structure,
isn't it? It's just that
and trying to figure out what that balance looks like.
And that balance is different for every couple.
Absolutely.
And it even changes all the time, right? Because, you know, who's going to work? I remember myself saying when I had my second child, I'm going to go back to work. So my husband had arranged that he'd be home. And then about 2 weeks before, it's like, I can't do it. So he had to change it all. But you just don't know until you get there. And it's just the way it is, isn't it? And you're trying to do it. All that adjusting takes so much energy as well, particularly if you might already be sleep deprived or experiencing anxiety or whatever, depression. It's just so much harder and it's so much more draining.
And you lose your main support, your partner, who had always been there for you, suddenly doesn't have the capacity anymore. You know, and you said that before, Naomi, that you kind of neglected the relationship. You know, that's incredibly difficult. It takes a real toll.
It does. It does. And it's something that, you know, you don't realise the damage that things like depression and anxiety can cause until much further down the track when you've been able to take care of your mental health, step back, kind of do a check on things and go, oh, wow, we haven't gone out for dinner in over a year and had a conversation, or, you know, are we still on the same path together? You don't have time to think about those kinds of things when you're battling anxiety and depression, because that's all consuming on some days.
So you can totally understand too. So sometimes you might come back together and you think, we're not on the same path. Did you find you were on the same path?
At varying points.
Yeah, at varying points. I think our relationship is the strongest it's ever been now. Mm-hmm. So 10 years on. And we've had a few battles in that time beyond the PND and the anxiety. But I think it's because we have learnt skills, built on our skills, and we're better at having conversations. We're better at listening to one another and not attacking one another. And I think I'm also getting better at recognising when the anxiety is talking, and I'm able to say that to Andy. I know my behaviour is like this, this and this today, but I actually think that this is why. So this is the anxiety speaking to you, not me. And we're able to see it as its own little
entity,
third person in the relationship that is not always liked or welcomed, but we know that it's there. So that has really improved things. We've had lots of counselling. I've had counselling on my own, and we've had couples counselling quite a few times on and off through the years when we've gone, okay, I think we need to check back in with a counsellor again now. And we might see someone for, you know, six sessions, and then we've got built up our tools and our skills again, and we can come away. And
Was that a hard decision?
No.
No.
Okay.
No. And even going back into it, it can be frustrating because you think, oh, we've done this before. Why do we need to go and have the same conversations again?
Yes.
Because, no, you know, you feel like nothing's changed. Yeah. But at the same time, it's just a reset. And it's just getting yourself back on the same page together.
And, And people change.
People change.
You're not the same person.
Yes.
As when you first met and got married. And I'm certainly not the same person as I was before I had Manus. And, you know, 3 years later, I might be a bit different again. And you're growing in different ways as well. So whilst you might feel like, oh, yeah, we're back on the couch, we're talking it out again, it's the same stuff, it's not. Yeah. There are the little layers that are added over time. You kind of, you don't realise that they're there.
Readjusting the values and strategies in a changing environment or changing context.
I heard someone recently describe relationships as like a cross-cultural experience no matter what, in the sense that you both come from completely different families of origin. And so there's all that stuff, you know, that is informing how you are together as well, which, you know, we often don't kind of consider or unpack, you know, and then use to learn new skills or identify when there are sort of difficulties.
And then throw in there a baby and a few life adjustments and other challenges and stresses and responsibilities. Changing role models?
You're quite unique in the sense that you were both like, yeah, we needed counselling. It was not a difficult decision. We just did it.
Mm.
Not all people feel like that. You know, often people feel like that's a failing too.
Yeah.
Why do you think you guys were different?
I think we're both quite brave individuals in some ways. And we'll have a go at something different to see if it works.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I think for me, I know that I'm a talker, and if I can talk through stuff, or if I can, and I write a lot as well, if I can put those experiences out into the world, I'm able to cope with them better. Mm-hmm. And I think as I've gotten older, I'm not embarrassed anymore about what happens in here. Mm-hmm. It's just who I am, and I'm still accepting that that's part of me now, but.
And a very beautiful part of you.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it is. I can vouch for that. It's a very beautiful part of you.
Thank you. I think, yeah, the more I saw a counsellor, the more normal it felt for me. And I just got to the point where I went, okay, this is part of my life now. Mm-hmm. Some people go to the gym. Some people go to painting classes. And some people... I don't know, whatever
talk
other people
someone.
Do.
Yeah. Mm. It's a very strong culture thing, though, isn't it?
Really
like
is, yeah.
In America, you would never be having this conversation about seeing someone. It's it's almost like a bit of a status thing, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas it's just an Australian culture thing. And I think it's so wonderful to see that more progressive thinking and that openness. And as you both said at the very beginning, Andy's a very practical person and this is a practical solution.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you got help 6 months in.
Yeah.
I wonder, looking back, if you think some maybe pre kind of counselling before having the baby, which is something that some people do sometimes, might have been helpful for you guys to know what was coming.
It could have, but I think I was seeing a maternal health nurse as part of our mother's group set up. And I remember the first few sessions I had with her one-on-one, I glossed over how I was really feeling. Mm-hmm. And even in the mother's group setting, and we're all quite close now, there are a few conversations where there were clearly women struggling. And I know that some of my mum's group members were struggling at the time, but we didn't want to be the first to fess up, mm-hmm. I think. So, and it's very easy to fib when you're filling out a how am I feeling form.
Mm-hmm.
You tick a box and the form doesn't argue with you or watch for little clues.
Or take your heart rate to
no,
see if you're
none of those
likely
things.
To have lied on that question.
None of those things. So I think the support was there for me early on, but I was just a little reluctant, I think, or scared to admit what I was potentially facing because I was busy.
Yeah.
Feeding a baby and getting up every 3 hours of a night, and I was tired, and I didn't want to accept that I had to deal with another thing on top of that.
Mm.
I think that was a big part of it in the very very early months.
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't have the capacity to take that on.
And I think it's something. So with some of the other experiences we've certainly gone through as well, that when you have childbirth, it's a traumatic experience, which, however, your story rolls out.
Mm.
But it's then when you're going into that initial phases of the baby and you're trying to navigate your way through it, you've got to come through at the other end of it before you can decompress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when a lot of things have shown up. And we've certainly talked about crisis and peacetime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's we're actually stronger in crisis, and it's in peacetime when all the lights and the flashing and everything's died down. That's when it sort of really becomes a battle as you decompress and work through some of the issues you've got.
So yeah, you assess the damage.
So you're sort of 6 months past childbirth.
Mm.
It might have been around 4 months that we started seeing the first spiral or something like that.
Yeah. I think what would be really amazing, mother's group, it's, we've been doing it for a long, long time. Mm. dads groups, really, really early support for dads, even if it's just once a fortnight and you catch up for a beer. I think there are some groups like that starting to form now. But it's not written into the whole having a baby plan with our hospital system, because then you can meet with other dads and you can chat without your partners listening in and find out whether their partners are struggling or hang on, is this situation at home normal for me or not? Mm-hmm. Because at home you're in a little bubble. Like Andy said, there is no reference point, you know, if it's your first baby, of what was it like before or what's it like in someone else's house. Absolutely. What does functioning normally look like when you have a newborn?
Absolutely. And how are you coping now that you're not getting the same attention, support from your partner, you know, that you once had? How are you coping with that? Because that's the thing I always hear from dads. It's like, you know, what's my role in this? I used to be so important to my partner, and now I just do nappies and dishes and cooking.
And you're not allowed to touch your partner because she's had a baby on her all day.
Yes.
And I remember Andy coming home from work. I'd be waiting in the doorway with Manus in his little car carrier. He loved being rocked in that. And I'd be watching the clock, and Andy would walk in, and I'd hand him Manus.
He'd just go, all right.
And I'd just sit. And he was an easy baby. He wasn't a difficult baby by any means, but I just want to sit down by myself. And Andy would come over for a cuddle, and I'd go, no, you just cannot touch me. I'm touched out. I've had someone on me all day long.
What was that like?
Oh, it's pretty confronting, and it's a little, well, it's a little, in some ways, it's a little bit demoralising because you've got to, you sort of, okay, right, you find your place in the back of the room sort of thing, and can I make a cup of tea?
Sorry. But, you make a good cup of tea.
your world's completely turned on its head. I guess everybody tries to find their own way and through that. And some people, again, they deal with it better than others or find the support they need. It's having that support group for dads. Mm-hmm. It's a great idea. It might take a little bit of time to actually implement in its full capacity, because by nature men are problem solvers. They're not really communicators, so they're more likely to operate in individual silos, I think. Just
make it in a workshop.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Over some woodwork.
Yeah. But maybe that's a way of doing it. You know, the men's shed.
The men's shed
becomes, you know, more for new fathers rather than the old boys, or you get both of them combined. And
absolutely.
That's right. Yeah.
So how are you now, Amy? Like the anxiety, the depression that you experienced. Yeah, how are you now? Years on.
I'm not better. Okay. I don't think you... Well, for me, it hasn't been a matter of I had a mental illness and then it was fixed. Yeah. I think it just... It's part of me now. Mm-hmm. It can't be undone. Mm-hmm. There are still days where I experience anxiety. I'm much quicker at recognising it for what it is now. Mm-hmm. And I have medication if I need to take it. I'm not on medication all of the time. But I'm also better at not pushing myself as hard and knowing my limits. I can say no quite comfortably to things now, but that's taken a long time. But I'm as I said before, I'm getting more comfortable with just saying no. If I push myself too far, this is what happens to me. I experience anxiety, or I might go into a lull. So I just have to be mindful of that. And it's amazing how people respond. They go, oh, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, oh, she's just too busy, or how rude, she doesn't feel like doing that, or whatever the case may be. I can be really open and honest and upfront, and people are so accepting of that.
And
yeah, and they're really respectful of that. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And you guys are friends. You've known each other for
we go way back
for a while now. Before you were saying how these things that have happened to Naomi are, from your perspective, really, really beautiful. And I just wanted to hear a bit more about what you meant by that.
Yeah. I actually met Naomi when she was working had her photography studio, and I had my two children photographed, and we just connected. And we stayed in contact ever since. And so over the journey, Naomi's talked to me about her experiences with anxiety, and she is an absolute pocket rocket in terms of getting things done, and absolutely amazing. And you can really understand when you know Naomi. She's so creative and talented and organised and just incredible energy. And so, when she was describing the challenges with anxiety and the pressure she puts on herself, but she is absolutely amazing in the work that she does and the person that she is. And the insights, I think, that having and living with anxiety and depression has given just gives her a whole other dimension to her as a person.
Okay.
So that's what I'm referring to. Okay.
And when I was, Eddie and I took a little holiday with our son so I could adjust to going on medication full time for PND. And when we came home and I started to go back to work, I rang Nicole and said, this is what I've been going through. But how can I give back? How can I? It wasn't on day one that I called her. It was a little bit of time after. But I felt like I needed to support other people. And because it knocked me for six, I thought I would be the last person to experience postnatal depression because I knew about it, so I could catch it out. I was healthy and fit and young and whatever. All of the reasons why I thought I wouldn't be... diagnosed with PND. So I contacted Nicole and said, right, what can I do? Mm. Yeah.
So what are you doing now? And what are your kind of words of advice for people watching around kind of nurturing and sustaining your partnership?
My one piece of advice is if it's your first time parenting, try to dedicate time to caring for yourself, caring for your relationship as you would caring for your baby. That would be the number one thing, I think, for me. It is a big job, but I think when all of your focus is on the baby's needs, everything starts to fall away, and they're the things that you need to keep you going.
And do they have to be big things? Because I guess that's the thing. People go, oh, how is that possible? But can they be small things?
They can be the tiniest things. Mm. They can be as simple as when your baby goes to sleep, to sit and just have a cup of tea and talk about your day. It can be that simple.
Mm.
You don't need to go on lavish date nights. You don't need to have, a week away. It can just be go for a walk and hold hands. Mm-hmm. Like simple stuff.
Yeah.
Talk to each other. And also, I think, give your partner that space that they need because you're both going through changes. Mm. So be open and as accepting as you can of all of that. And just keep talking. Mm. I think that's the biggest thing.
Talking is one of the big things, I think. Just having open conversations. And I think also just being grateful for the time that you, those moments that you do get together or the assistance that one way or the other you're providing each other, just so that there is that feeling, you can continue that feeling of connection, as hard as it is the whole way through.
And Andy, any other words of advice that you would have for new dads who might be expecting their first baby or?
Just have a go. I think that's the main thing. Yeah. Just sometimes roll up your sleeves and get into it because it's not easy, but it's incredibly rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Mm.
Naimi, Andy, thank you so much for speaking with us today on the Mum Drum. It's been great fun.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Mum Drum podcast. Watch or listen at mumdrum.org.au.